Now, it might sound rather too broad, not to say vague and general, but this is not really so, because the Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, is embodied in various spiritual practices. And this is made clear in another episode in the Pali scriptures. In this particular episode, we are reminded that in the Buddha's time, there were a number of spiritual teachers in India. Sometimes we think that it's only nowadays that there are all sorts of spiritual teachers traveling around. But it was just like that in the Buddha's day too in India. They didn't, of course, travel around by jet in those days. Some of them flew through the air by means of their supernormal power, so we're told, but otherwise they resorted to ordinary methods of locomotion. And one of the best known of the teachers, other than the Buddha, in the Buddha's day in India, was Nigantha Nathaputta, as he's called in the Pali text, who is usually identified with Mahavira, the founder of Jainism. And he died shortly before the Buddha. And after his death, his pupils, his followers, that is to say the monk followers, split into two parties, into two factions, and they disagreed about what their master, Nigantha Nathaputta, had actually taught. And they almost came to blows about it. So Ananda, who it seems was a bit of a gossip, so to speak, and used to collect the news and retail it to the Buddha, told the Buddha about this. And Ananda added, being a rather practical-minded sort of person, he added that he hoped that there would be no such disputes after the Buddha himself had gone. That is to say, no disputes among the Buddha's followers about the Dharma. So what did the Buddha say in reply to that? The Buddha replied that such a thing was impossible. He said that he was confident that there were not even two monks among his followers who would describe the teachings that he had given them discordantly. And what were those teachings, he said? He reminded Ananda what they were. He said, the four foundations of mindfulness. This was one of those teachings, that is to say, mindfulness of the body, of the feelings, thoughts, and realities. And then the four right efforts, that also he reminded Ananda of, that also he had taught, that is to say, one, the efforts to prevent the arising of unskillful mental states that have not arisen, two, the effort to abandon unskillful mental states that have arisen, thirdly, the effort to develop skillful mental states that have not arisen, and fourthly, the effort to maintain in existence those skillful mental states that have already arisen in one. And then he went on to remind Ananda about the four bases of success, the five spiritual faculties, the five powers, the seven factors of enlightenment, the Noble Eightfold Path. All these things constituted the Dharma that he had taught, and about which he was confident there would be no dispute after his death, even between two of his disciples. So what do we notice about this list of teachings that the Buddha gives here? The list of teachings that, as it were, sums up his Dharma. We notice that they're all practical. They're all, in fact, actual practices. There's nothing theoretical here. The Buddha says nothing about nirvana, nothing about shunyata, nothing about the mind. He doesn't even mention conditioned co-production or dependent origination. It's as though he is saying that the teachings which he has given his disciples were all practical teachings, and therefore they were unlikely to describe them differently. After all, practical teachings involve certain practices, and these experiences would be the same for all those who practiced, and therefore they'd be unlikely to disagree. It's much the same, we may say, in ordinary life. We disagree about theory, but we don't very often disagree about practice. We might disagree, for instance, about the nature of electricity. Well, we're unlikely to disagree about how to mend a fuse. So, similarly, the disciples might disagree about theoretical teachings, but they could hardly disagree about practical teachings, provided, of course, that they'd actually practiced them. So the Dharma is therefore embodied primarily in spiritual practices, things that you actually do. There's another interesting point that arises in connection with this episode. Despite what the Buddha has said, Ananda was not reassured. He was not satisfied. He was still worrying about what might happen after the Buddha's death. So he brought up another point. He said, well, even though they all agree about the teaching, there might be disputes about livelihood. There might be disputes about the code of rules. In Pali, the Patimokkha, the 150 rules observed by the monks, and still observed in many cases. So what did the Buddha say? And this is very important. The Buddha said, a dispute over livelihood or a dispute over the code of rules is a trifling matter. It's only disputes over the path or disputes over the way of practice that would be disastrous. So we've now seen, briefly, what is meant by Buddhism, what is meant by Dharma. So we can begin to see in what sense the FWBO is a Buddhist movement. It's a Buddhist movement in the sense, first of all, that we're concerned with the individual. Buddhism is concerned with the individual, in fact values the individual in a way I think that no other teaching does. And Buddhism, or the Dharma, is simply whatever helps that individual to grow, whatever helps to develop him to develop from lower to higher levels of being and consciousness. At the same time, this Dharma doesn't represent just a vague general principle of growth. It's embodied in specific spiritual practices.